Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege serving as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, and the host of it is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off with Carol Marks in conversation with Ezekiel Zeke Emanuel. He's the son of Benjamin Emanuel and Marsha Emanuel and the brother of Chicago mayor and former White House chief of staff Rahm Emanuel and Hollywood talent agent Ari Emanuel. He will talk about his new book, Brothers Emanuel, a memoir of an American family, published by Random House.
Zeke Emanuel, the warmest of welcomes to A Touch of Gray.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Now, you're the oldest of the brothers.
What made you decide
to write a memoir about your brothers, and what do they and your families think about it?
Well, there were really two motivations. The first was to sort of recall and record stories for my daughters. They were getting older, in their 20s, and I wanted to make sure that they had the family lore. There are some people in the family they didn't know, like my grandparents, and I wanted to make sure some of those stories were recorded for them and they could, you know where they came from. And then as my brothers and I were getting higher and higher national profiles, more people began asking us, what did Mom put in the cereal? How come you have three brothers who are successful in three different areas? And questions like that. And so this is an attempt to really answer that question, the what did Mom put in the cereal, and that's the title of the last chapter of the book.
And I really enjoyed it. And I want to talk first about your parents, because they were both responsible for the caring and ambitious values that they put into you. And I love the story in your book about how they met in a hospital. Can you tell us? It made me laugh.
Yeah, so my father was training as a pediatrician in Mount Sinai Hospital in Chicago, and one day there was a baby who had the attending doctor was worried that he had something called intussusception. That's when one part of the intestine overlaps another part. My father didn't think so, but he took the baby down to get the emergency room where the X-ray machine was. This is the 1950s, about 1955, and there was a radiology technician there who was going to take the X-ray, and she said, look, it's not that busy. Why don't you hang around? I'll take the X-ray. I'll develop it, and I'll give you the result. My dad, at that time, he lived in the hospital. He was dog-tired. He'd been on call every other night. He lays down on a gurney and falls asleep. The radiology technician takes the X-ray, comes out. He's asleep on the gurney. She takes the wheel lock, unlocks it. The gurney slides down the incline in the emergency room out into the driveway, waking my father up. And he sort of laughs at this and wonders, who that sparky person is. Next thing you know, they're dating, and within a few weeks, they're engaged to be married.
I think it's a wonderful story. Now,
yeah.
It really is. Now, is it fair to say that growing up, your meals together were in the Kennedy style because you were all expected to be well-versed in the events of the day and you actually were quizzed about them?
Yeah, we were expected to follow the news, think about the news stories, have opinions, and my parents didn't expect us to be quiet. We certainly weren't quiet, and solicited our views, and more importantly than just our views, they solicited our ideas and explanations and rationales for why we had those views.
Now, it came to your parents' influence on your values. What did your father constantly tell you when you were playing chess?
Yeah, so my dad actually learned how to play chess and became a very, very good chess player in Switzerland when he was in medical school. And he was hoping that his kids would become good chess players, and we would every week lay out the chess set either at the dining room table or on the living room coffee table. And he would never sort of play down to us, and we were always losing. And he would constantly say, you have to remember what Napoleon said, offense is the best defense. So he always was a very aggressive player with us. We never learned much chess. None of us play chess today. But we did remember offense is the best defense.
And you certainly use that whenever you need to. Now, when it comes to your mother, civil rights was her passion, and she took you and your brothers to march behind Dr. Martin Luther King when he walked through the South communities of Chicago. So what was the impact of being on that march and learning what happened after you and your brothers left to go home? Because that was really something.
Yeah, my mother was heavily engaged in the civil rights movement. She was one of the core Congress on Racial Equality organizers in Chicago. She organized a lot of demonstrations. She herself went on a lot of demonstrations. In 1963, she was part of the March on Washington and heard the famous I Have a Dream speech right there on the Washington Mall. And she would frequently take us on demonstrations, have us hold signs, and one of the demonstrations was led by Reverend King. And it was a lot of people were not happy about it. Tomatoes, eggs, rocks were thrown, and the Chicago police force protected us, but it was pretty traumatic, and certainly traumatic as a young kid to be reminded that people could hate the way they did. But it was one of the things my mom deeply believed in, racial equality. She insisted on it, and we had a lot of friends when we were growing up who were African-American, and as a consequence, we were not infrequently called nigger lovers and other such epithets.
And you did realize, I'm sure, from that really that big problems can be confronted and that you and your brothers could be part of the solution.
Well, we were always taught that we had to fight injustice and that you know, there was no alternative but to do the right thing.
Now, when it comes to your brothers, Ari is the youngest. Why do you call him the Devil Kid, and what qualities does he have to make him so good as a Hollywood agent?
Well, Ari came out fighting right from the start. Actually, his delivery was one of these 30-hour marathons. He had what's called the nuchal cord, which is the umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck. And my mom had a very, very long and arduous delivery, but he came out fine and fighting. And he was put in a crib in the bedroom with Rom and I, and the crib was sort of at an angle with our bunk bed, and we would jump from the top bunk into the crib to see how high he could bounce. And so he had to endure. He was a very physically fit and connected kid. But he also he had this impish quality. If you look at any picture, he's got this sort of impish grin and this sort of mischievous view in his eye. He would always push everyone up until the absolute limit before they would explode and then charm them back into loving him. And he had that and still has that tremendous ability. He's also got an unbelievable amount of energy. He was the classic ADHD dyslexic kid before those things were widely recognized in American society in the 1960s, and that energy, I think, and that sort of strategic thinking is what's gotten him ahead in the
Well, it certainly has. And then let's talk about Rom. He's now the mayor of Chicago, but I learned a couple of very interesting things about him from your book, that your parents took him to a neurologist because he wasn't talking, and what did the neurologist say about him?
Yeah, Rom came out pretty passive and quiet. He was not a loud kid. I was the loud kid. My parents were worried about him, and they had him evaluated, and the neurologist said, oh, no, everything's connected up there. The brain is fully wired normally, just that he prefers to be quiet and passive. And I think, you know, in those years he was observing the world and observing how people behaved and figuring out from those observations what the world was like. I was a completely different kid in that I figured out how the world behaved by poking at it and experimenting on it and engaging it physically.
And Rom sure knows how to express his emotions today. And the other thing that I thought was so interesting was, I don't know why, but your mother decided that you should all take classical ballet dancing lessons, and you and Ari had no interest in it. But I was surprised to learn that Rom really took to it like a duck to water. Who would know?
Yes, it is true. We spent a year taking ballet lessons. Like you, we just still don't know why we were signed up for ballet lessons. But Rom did take them and did continue. He moved from a small studio in a strip mall near our house to a pretty good studio in Evanston, Illinois. He was a natural talent.
Now, when it comes to all of you growing up, you used to spend a lot of time fighting with each other. Does that tradition continue today with arguing interspersed with laughter? And that's one of your favorite pastimes is when you all get together, and are you able to talk to each other a lot?
Absolutely. So sometime in the early 90s, Rahm decided it was his idea that we should all do Thanksgiving together, all the families, and it should rotate houses. So 1 year my house, 1 year Rahm's house, 1 year Ari's house. And we are warm. We continue to talk 3, 4, 5 times a week. We are still also competitive. So while we can hug each other, as the picture on the back shows, we can also punch each other in the shoulders.
Well, I think all those things make your book, Zeke Emanuel, Brothers Emanuel, A Member of an American Family, a book that everyone should read. I wish more families were like yours and took such an interest in their children. And I think that the message from your parents is one that we could all take heart, that the world needs to be a better place, and that we're lucky to be here, and that we should all do our best to do good things for others. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. You really got the book.
That's Ezekiel Zeke Emanuel talking to Carol Marks, and his new book is called Brothers Emanuel, A Memoir of an American Family, published by Random House. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And here is the host of the program again, Carol Marks, in conversation this time around with Becky Aikman. She's the author of Saturday Night Widows, The Adventures of Six Friends Remaking Their Lives. It's published by Crown.
Now, your story of becoming a widow at 49 starts with the death from cancer of your 66-year-old husband. And a year later, still weeping and uncertain on what to do next, you tried a widow support group at a local Y. What happened that resulted in your being told not to come back to that group?
Well, the group itself was, I'm sure there are wonderful groups out there, but this one was a very gloomy experience. The social worker made everybody go around the room and tell the most traumatic stories of losing their spouses, and everyone became very upset and very sad. And afterwards, I said to the social worker, wouldn't it be nice if the group focused more on the future and focused on positive ideas for how to move forward? And he told me I did not fit in and that I shouldn't come back. So I had just been kicked out of my widow support group, which has to be a new low.
Now, you've done a lot of research for this book, and you heard at that support group that you went to that they really emphasize Kubler-Ross's 5 stages of grief. And why do you say, because I think this is really useful, because I think a lot of people misunderstand that these 5 stages are misunderstood. And what's a misunderstanding all about?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Carol. After I got kicked out of my widow's support group, it did have the advantage of giving me the kick in the pants I needed to go out and learn more about all of this myself. And I discovered that only very recently have scientists actually studied thousands of people who are grieving to see what it's really like when you lose someone close to you. And one of the primary things they said is that the idea of the 5 stages of grief by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was put together based on people who were dying, not people who were grieving for someone else. So they really do not apply to people who are grieving. And there are no set stages that people follow. What scientists have learned is that people are naturally resilient, that losing someone close to you is a common experience, and we have ways of coping. And no one follows stages. Instead, they have emotional waves where they can feel very sad, but then they can have moments where they can feel joyous or find the humor in things. And that is completely normal and helpful to swing in and out of those states. And over time, it becomes less intense. So they told me that what can be helpful when you're ready to stop feeling sad, when you're ready to think about moving on and trying to have a happy life again, it's good to push yourself to have new experiences, to have fun experiences, to have relationships with friends, and to have some joy and some humor in your life. Humor is one of the best coping mechanisms people have for any tough situation in life, and so it's all right to embrace that and accept it and enjoy yourself a little bit if you can.
And humor sure is wonderful for everything. Now, you got remarried, and then you decided to form a support group to test some of your ideas. How did you go about finding the women for your support group?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought, let's put together a group of other widows like myself and see if these ideas really work in action. So I just asked around everybody I knew to ask everybody they knew until I found five other women who were interested in doing this. I do remember that the first time I put everybody in the room together, I thought, wow, Becky, have you made a mistake? They were such a mismatch of personalities. There was Marcia, who was a very serious, successful, and to me kind of scary lawyer. There was Leslie, who was very light and funny and who had been a homemaker all her life. There was Dawn, who was very glamorous. There was Denise, who was kind of shy. I thought, these women have nothing in common, and the only thing they do have in common is not the sort of thing that lights a fire under a party. But I was afraid it would be a sad story. What it turned out to be, though, was an adventure story. Not only the adventures we shared together, which were a lot of fun, but also the adventures each of us experienced as we move forward and made the many, many changes we had to make new lives for ourselves.
Not only did you do a lot of fun things like cooking class and private tour of the Metropolitan Museum and going to a spa and buying sexy lingerie, but you did, which I think must have been a real blast.
It was a hoot. We had a lot of laughs over that, but it was kind of serious too because a lot of these people had been married for a long time and we were facing the prospect of going on our first date again after so many years of not having to think about such things. So one of the women suggested we go try on lingerie together and get a little confidence in that we could be widows, but we could be sexy. So we did that, and we had a lot of fun and a lot of laughs. And all the TV shows we've been on have seemed very interested in us sharing pictures of that, which we have not done.
Well, you also talked about helpful topics like sex, dating, and reinventing yourself. And did the women in your group have some interesting takes on what it was like to be out after being away for a while from the whole dating scene?
Oh,
it's not easy.
We talked a lot about how we felt like we were adolescents again. The idea of going on a date was something so new and so scary to us that we would giggle about it like kids, and we were also kind of petrified about it. So it was so helpful that we had this group of friends and we could talk it through, and after the dates we could also laugh about what had gone well and what hadn't gone well on the dates. So at least it was funny if it didn't work, and sometimes it worked pretty well, and some of the women wound up in wonderful new relationships, which gave us all hope.
Getting back to your support group, how did the women in it change from opening up with each other, and how did the group help and change you?
Oh, well, we changed in so many ways. When we first met, most of the people in the group were still very sad and feeling closed in and afraid to make moves in their lives. But over the course of that year, I think three of the women moved to new homes because they needed a home that reflected who they were now. If their children had grown up and their house was too big for them, if it didn't reflect their taste anymore, it was a very important move for them to create a home that made them happy. Some of the women changed the work that we did. Most of us started dating again, and a couple of us entered new long-term relationships, and with all the compromises and complications that go along with doing that when you are not 20 anymore, meeting the children of someone you're dating, that was a new experience for people. For me, it was very helpful to have the group because even though I remarried at the point when the group started, I was still going through so many transitions, adjusting to a new marriage and a new life, and I'd left my job and was writing a book instead. I had a stepdaughter for the first time, and that was a completely new experience for me. So a lot of the women who had children have fabulous advice for me on how to cope with that. It turned out to be a much more meaningful experience for me than I expected it would be. I had thought as the journalist I would be more of an observer, but I got sucked right into the entire experience and really became a part of the group, and I still enjoy the friendship so much.
Let's bring the group activities up to date. The group did get disbanded. Why, and do you still see each other and keep in touch?
We decided that the book would follow our story for 1 year, and so much happened in that year that that's where the book stopped. But we still get together and have fabulous times all the time because the friendship is enduring. And I think one of the things I've taken away, and readers have told me they've taken away, it doesn't matter if you're a widow or if you're divorced or single or married, making time in your busy life to do fabulous things with friends is such a wonderful thing. And to try to form a group like this and to have new experiences like this, no matter what your situation in life, is something that it's good to make time for.
That's Becky Aikman in conversation with Carol Marks. The book that Becky Aikman wrote is titled Saturday Night Widows, The Adventures of Six Friends Remaking Their Lives, published by Crown. Coming up next, a little bit about behind the scenes in the talk radio business with the man from Talkers, Kevin Casey, and Steve Wiseman will join us when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/GOV delivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/GOV delivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the point in the program where we join up with our friend from Talkers Magazine, our senior correspondent Kevin Casey, who's also vice president and executive editor at the trade publication of Talk Radio, Talkers at Talkers.com. And Kevin, at this moment, I'm up in our New England headquarters, and you are down in Florida on a visit. And I was thinking about Florida's very interesting with sports, because so many people in Florida, and we have a huge listenership to this program on radio stations down in the Florida area, in Palm Beach County especially, so many of the people that live in Florida have mixed loyalties when it comes to sporting events. And a great example is in basketball, the Miami Heat are extremely popular in South Florida, extremely hated around the rest of the country, which I guess is a badge of honor for certain teams. But I don't know if you ever noticed in your trips to Florida that sometimes the people at the arenas, there are more people for the visitors than for the home teams, because so much of the population in Florida is people that lived elsewhere, grew up elsewhere.
Sure, yeah, transplanted. And it's been a big problem now for more than 20 years. You know, I mean, I remember back when before the Tampa Bay Buccaneers actually got good, their games were constantly filled with fans of the visitors. And the team found it very frustrating that the people would cheer more for the visitor than for them.
Yeah. And you would think that people would be very excited about having a local team. The Miami Marlins and the Florida Marlins, and then the Miami Marlins, they changed their name.
Right.
They've had a tremendously difficult time getting people to come out to their beautiful, now they have a beautiful new stadium. And so many Latin Americans live in South Florida, and Latin America is a great bastion of baseball. You would think that they'd have more fans, and they do not. I know occasionally when I want to see a New England team, I'll go to a sports bar if it's not being broadcast to them down there. And it seems like it's a colony for Jets fans, Red Sox fans, Patriots fans, rather, Giants, Jets, Philadelphia Eagles. It really is. It's like a southern colony of displaced northeastern people.
But, it really is. But, you know, interestingly enough, though, there's one exception to all of this, which is the Miami Dolphins, the NFL's Miami Dolphins, have a rabid fan base down here and have had for decades.
And maybe they've earned it over the years. You know, they have had some glory days. Kevin Casey, thank you very much. If you're interested in knowing about what's going on behind the scenes in talk radio, which includes, of course, sports talk as well, political talk and all other kinds of talk, go to talkers.com. Michael Harrison here, Touch of Gray, talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and it's time for Steve Wiseman to join us for the rest of the way. He's our senior correspondent. He'll be talking now with Dr. Robert Lustig, who spent the past 16 years treating childhood obesity and studying the effects of sugar on the central nervous system. He's a member of the UCSF Institute for Health Policy Studies, and he's going to talk to Stephen about his new book titled Fat Chance: Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease, published by Hudson Street Press.
First of all, let me ask some of the obvious ones, the questions, and get these out. Sugar is a villain. What does it do to our bodies?
Well, it does three things, and unfortunately, they're all problematic. The first thing it does is it overwhelms your liver's capacity to be able to metabolize it. Sugar can only be metabolized in the liver for energy. So when you take in a big sugar bolus, like a soft drink, or even fruit juice, doesn't matter, basically your liver can't handle all those calories all at once. And so what it does is it uses an escape valve where it turns that extra energy into liver fat. Now, that fat should get exported out of the liver, and that would raise your triglyceride levels, which is, you know, potentially dangerous in terms of atherosclerosis. Or if it doesn't export it out, it gets stuck in the liver and you get non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That causes your liver to not work properly. That causes your pancreas to make extra insulin, which drives energy into other cells in your body and starts the chronic metabolic disease process. And that's how you end up with type 2 diabetes. We have now shown that sugar is the proximate cause of type 2 diabetes worldwide.
Wow.
Second thing it does is it causes your body to rust.
Rust?
The browning reaction. It's called Maillard reaction. It's the reason bananas brown or apples brown. That happens inside your body, and it's happening as we speak. And if you had orange juice this morning, it's happening 7 times faster. And that when you brown, it causes the proteins in your body to become less flexible, and it can cause cell death, and ultimately that causes organ death, and that causes your death. So that rusting process is something to try to minimize. Sugar maximizes it. And then the third thing it does is it goes to your brain and tells your brain you haven't eaten. It actually interferes with the normal signals that convey normal levels of adiposity called leptin and satiety. Bottom line is when you consume a lot of sugar, you want more. And you want more partly because of reward and partly because of starvation. Your brain can't see what you've eaten. So you end up eating more. And that's why the food industry has plied all of our food with it. Of the 600,000 items in the American grocery store, 80% of them have added sugar, and that's on purpose, because the food industry knows when they add it, you buy more.
And, you know, one of the things I found interesting in the book and then started noticing myself was adding sugar to products that never, ever had it before, and that just only, it's like your basic conspiracy. So you tell me Mary Poppins gave me bad advice when she said a spoonful of sugar is going to make that medicine go down?
No, let me tell you, we published a paper called Just a Spoonful of Sugar Helps Your Blood Pressure Go Up.
Hey, what about the sugar substitutes? Are they as bad, or are they okay, or what's the story with those?
I wish I could tell you. There are reasons why I can't tell you. We don't have the science. The science doesn't exist, and I am all about the science. Here's why, I mean, in 10 words or less. There's something called pharmacokinetics, and there's something called pharmacodynamics. They're not the same. Pharmacokinetics is what your body does to a drug. Pharmacodynamics is what a drug does to your body. They're not the same. We have all the pharmacokinetics for all the non-nutritive sweeteners, all the diet sweeteners, because the FDA demands it. We have none of the pharmacodynamics because the FDA does not demand it.
Interesting.
So we don't know what any of these diet sweeteners do to the various hormones that we've been talking about, leptin, insulin, ghrelin, peptide YY. We don't know what it does to your long-term food, energy intake. We don't know if it actually promotes weight loss or not. Does your body compensate for those calories in some way? We still don't know that. And the food industry, since they don't have to do it because the FDA doesn't demand it, can't improve their sales, so they don't do it. And the NIH says, well, it's the food industry's job, so they don't pay for it. So the bottom line is we are in an impasse in terms of data collection on diet sweeteners.
What about sugars that occur naturally in foods? And I'm thinking specifically the difference between orange and orange juice. You've got the orange with the juice that within it, but all of the fiber as compared to orange juice. So is the fruit still healthy to eat?
Right. The fruit is fine. The juice is not. And the reason is because the juice is nature's way of getting you to eat your fiber.
I like it.
It's actually the good part of the fruit. The juice is the bad part of the fruit. But the fiber is what ends up in the garbage, and that's a problem. Why is fiber so important? Well, fiber acts as a barrier on the inside of your intestine to reduce the rate of absorption so that your liver doesn't get overwhelmed. It has a chance to metabolize what's coming in because it's coming in slower. So this is a dose issue, but it's also a flux issue. How fast the nutrients get absorbed and how fast your liver gets overwhelmed has everything to do with how much fat your liver is going to make and therefore how sick you're going to get. So fiber is the thing that reduces that rate. And so fiber is absolutely essential. Problem is, we've taken fiber out of all of our foods because you can't freeze fiber.
Interesting. Okay, what are some of the We certainly we know about fresh fruit and fresh vegetables, but are there other sources of fiber of which we may not necessarily be as aware?
Well, I mean, the famous one is whole grain.
Yeah.
Whole grain does have fiber. You know, when wheat comes out of the ground, what color is it?
Brown.
Brown, right? Okay, but when you make bread out of it, it's white. You know, what happened to the brown? Well, it got milled off at the mill. So if you look at a kernel of wheat, there's the bran on the outside, wheat bran, that's the fiber, and then there's the starch, the white stuff on the inside. Now, if you consume that as a granule, the way, you know, it was grown, then what happens is the enzymes of your intestine have to strip that bran off before it can access the starch inside. And that takes a while. The problem is once you pulverize it, once you send it to the mill, so, you know, like whole wheat, you know, it still has the bran in it, so it's got a slightly brown color, but the starch is already out. Horse is out of the barn. It's too late already. So the problem is that the FDA says you can call an item whole grain if you start with a whole grain, but if you pulverize it, it's still whole grain, except it's not, because the structure of that grain has been decimated. And so we do not have good labeling for what is actually going on in our food. Whole grains are okay, but the problem is you don't know what's whole grain.
Yeah, and then, you know, that is one of the things I noticed I was going to ask you about, because I do know in the labeling, here's someone who could be looking for whole grains, and they think they're getting it, but if they knew what they were reading carefully, they would realize that they are not. And the FDA,
this.
Yeah.
Think about this. Whole grain Lucky Charms. You see the that?
Don't tell me they actually say that.
They may have pulverized it. And, you know, made it, you know, processed it into Lucky Charms. But I guarantee you, that ain't whole grain anymore.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's magically delicious.
Well, that's another issue.
One of the other interesting things was you're talking about exercise. And exercise is important, but you said it's not going to lose you weight, even though you may be burning off calories?
That's right. So, bottom line, exercise is the single best thing you can do for yourself. No ifs, ands, or buts. I am a complete and total proponent and fan of exercise. I do not have anything bad to say about exercise, except exercise does not cause weight loss. Not alone, anyway. Exercise does not cause weight loss. Repeat, exercise does not cause weight loss. If anything, exercise causes weight gain. Why? Because it builds muscle. And that's good.
That's good to say, it's not a bad
mitochondria. Mitochondria are the little energy-burning factories inside your cells. And so it actually will take the edge off your liver getting overwhelmed. So it keeps you insulin sensitive because your liver doesn't get overwhelmed because you have mitochondria elsewhere to burn the energy. The point is, muscle weighs something. So when you stand on the scale, you may actually see that your weight has actually gone up with exercise.
Even though you probably are leaner.
But, right, exactly. Because it's not your weight that went that went down, but your waist, because the abdominal fat, the fat around your organs, the fat that actually causes the disease, the visceral fat, has gone down. So your belt size goes down. So I tell people all the time, do not look at the scale, look at your belt size.
Good point. The book is Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. It is very readable. It is very important. It will scare you, and maybe that's a good thing because it will make you do some good things for yourself.
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't write it to scare people. I actually wrote it to scare Washington.
Good.
And because they need a good scare. And the problem is they are in bed with the food industry because, after all, 6% of our exports are food.
Yeah.
And Congress has bought off. You know, the cheeseburger bill is a perfect example of how Congress is trying to actually do right by the food industry, not by its populace. Bottom line is that they need to help us, not them. And
good, good
I wrote
point.
The book to basically take back our food supply.
That's Dr. Robert Lustig in conversation with Steve Wiseman. The book is titled Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease, published by Hudson Street Press. Steve Wiseman will return in just a moment to talk about file and suspend strategy for Social Security. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with The Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve is a prolific writer. He's an attorney. He's an expert on many, many topics. He's one of the leading experts on scams. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And he has a website appropriately titled scamaside.com. Give it a visit. It's fascinating. Now Steve is here to talk about the file and suspend strategy for Social Security. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Social Security and Social Security reform in the news. The new budget that the president is proposing is supposed to have some changes in the COLAs, the cost of living adjustments that people get on a regular basis. This is something we're going to have to see what happens and how this shakes out in Congress. Certainly AARP and a lot of other groups are going to be fighting this. But, you know, as usual, when you're going to be looking in Social Security or about just anything else for a helping hand, the best place to look is at the end of your own arm. And there are a number of interesting strategies, believe it, strategies that you can use with Social Security. And one of them that's kind of interesting is called file and suspend. Now, under the current law, a spouse can't claim a spousal benefit until their spouse, the main beneficiary, claims benefit first. However, let's say that you've got the spouse who has most of the benefit. He or she can file for benefits and then immediately suspend receipt of those benefits. So let's say I'm at 66 and I can get my full benefit. I file, I suspend it, And then my spouse can claim a spousal benefit, which will be half of what that benefit would be at that time. And let's say she does so and meanwhile keeps on working. She can keep on working till she gets to whatever age, builds up her Social Security. Then she can switch. She can switch from her social, from the spousal share to her own Social Security that can be larger. Meanwhile, what I've done is I wait until, let's say, 70. And why 70? Because every year between the time that I am eligible for full Social Security benefits and 70 years of age, I'm going to get an 8% increase in what I would get on Social Security benefits. And think about it. I mean, where can you get 8% right now guaranteed income? And you're going to get essentially 24 to 30% more in your Social Security by waiting. So it can be a win-win-win situation for spouses. It doesn't work for everybody, and it does depend on your own particular financial situation and whether indeed you can afford to wait till age 70. But it is something that people should look at. It isn't something Social Security will be telling you about, but it's absolutely perfectly legal, and a lot of people do it.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. The File and Suspend Strategy for Social Security, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, our senior correspondent. Again, he's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. Check out scamaside.com. And you'll be up to date on the latest terrible things out there in the darkness of the night. And you'll be protected. Scamaside.com, Steve Wiseman. All right, well, that about does it. Thank you very much to Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, Carol Marks, the founder and host of the program. We are grateful to you for your fine work. Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.